Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to the premiere of Working the Marks here on Blog Talk Radio. We appreciate you tuning in here as we're kicking off this new podcast to kind of bring you a little bit something different about what's going on in the pro wrestling scene. I know the marketplace is really saturated, but I promise you, we're going to tell it like it is here better than any other podcast you're going to hear on the internet every single month here, once again, on Blog Talk Radio. I am New Jersey's premier journalist, Fernando Uribe, and he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, Patrick Vera. What's up, PR?
Wait a minute. This podcast isn't about politics?
No, man.
It's not about politics?
Can you believe it?
I didn't get the memo. Oh, man. All right. Well, I guess we're going to have to talk about wrestling, right? I guess we're going to have to talk about it. Yes. My name is Patrick Rivera. I'm apparently I'm New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst now, but possibly by the end of the show, I might lose half my name and just be Patrick, and then eventually it'll be changed to Olaf, and then I'll be released because I didn't really, you know, get the key demos, but whatever. Thanks for having me on, Professor.
Hey, listen, let's get to work here, as they say. And folks, by the way, for those of you tuning in here on Blog Talk Radio, check us out on our new social media pages on Instagram. I know everybody's on the gram. You love your Instagram live stories, whatever it is, folks. Just do us a favor. Click that follow button when you search us, working_the_marks. And, of course, also on Twitter, ladies and gentlemen, working_marks. Hey, every little bit helps here. So don't forget on Instagram, again, @working_the_marks. And on Twitter, @working_marks. Again, share it, folks. Once you take a listen, obviously, of today's episode, share it as much as you can and help us spread the word about what I'm going to argue is going to be the best podcast concerning pro wrestling of, you know, two guys who, you know, is a lifelong fan and a guy who worked in the business on the indie scene. So you know what? This is the dream team of commentary right now, folks, in pro wrestling. So let's get to it. Pat, obviously, it's late January. We know that time of the year where the road to WrestleMania begins with the Royal Rumble. And this year it is the 34th edition. My God, I feel old now thinking about all the Royal Rumble
wow.
I've seen in my lifetime. I know. I've seen every single Royal Rumble back when it was on the USA Network in 1988, which, by the way, was won by, if I'm not mistaken, by Big John Studd. So, actually, I'm sorry. No, it was Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Hacksaw,
yes.
Hacksaw,
that's right. And you know what? 34 years later, ladies and gentlemen, one of the big four pay-per-views that the WWF, again, believed in back in the day, now takes us to, again, to St. Louis. And I have to tell you something. The Dome at America Center in downtown St. Louis is going to be rocking and rolling, folks, next Saturday night. On a Saturday, as a matter of fact. Usually we've been watching the Royal Rumble for so many years on a Sunday. Indeed, it'll be on a Saturday. If I'm not mistaken, though, Patrick, the last time the Royal Rumble was on a Saturday night was the infamous Royal Rumble in 1991 in Miami, where then WWF champion, the Ultimate Warrior, dropped the WWF championship to then American turncoat Sergeant Slaughter. So if I'm going to say that's the last time we saw a Royal Rumble on a Saturday night, brother.
Yes, yes. I believe that is the last time that the Royal Rumble was actually featured. I'm actually pulling up the date right now because you're piquing my curiosity with that one. But I'll be honest, I think it's fantastic. I think it's good. It's, you know, it's definitely better for like families and stuff like that. Getting more, you know, families involved and people watching it. And plus, you know, I mean, it's kind of a bummer. Like, you know, you watch this long pay-per-view, then by the end of the night, I gotta go to work in the morning. You know, this at least is a little bit better. And yes, I believe it was Saturday, January 13th, 1991.
Yeah.
So
it was a crazy night in Miami, where again it was the middle of, you know, the Persian Gulf War. Vince McMahon decided to take politics and sort of incorporate it into pro wrestling by turning arguably an American hero. I know, right? God, you know, Vince did that by taking arguably one of the most perennial American characters like Sergeant Slaughter. For everyone that remembers, he was a voiceover on G.I. Joe, the famous cartoon, in the mid to late 80s, early 90s. And what do you know? He became an Iraqi sympathizer during the Persian Gulf War. And what better way to piss off people and to get ratings than to put the WWF title on Sergeant Slaughter? So that was a pretty infamous pay-per-view, to say the very least, Patrick.
Yeah, absolutely. It's notorious. I remember it as a kid. I mean, obviously, different times, you know, kayfabe and everything being alive. And, man, it was just special. It's a different time for sure. But I'm very excited about this Royal Rumble. Generally excited about the Royal Rumble. It's one of the most exciting events, I would say, probably in wrestling. I mean, not even just limited to WWE. But just in wrestling in general. So
absolutely, man. Absolutely. And again, 34 years of the Royal Rumble. Again, it's that pay-per-view. Yes, I'll still call it a pay-per-view. I don't care what Vince McMahon says. I'm going to call it a pay-per-view.
What did you call it?
It's a pay-per-view. It's a pay-per-view.
Redacted.
I'm paying for it.
Redacted.
No.
It's a premium live event.
Well,
you're not paying per view. You're paying per month. You want to call it a paper month? We could call it a paper month.
Well, you know what? I'm paying for it while I'm viewing it. I'm going to call it a pay-per-view. That's what I've always known it as, Patrick. Mm. So I'm going to call it a pay-per-view. But again, it's what sets up the road to WrestleMania later on in early April, folks, coming obviously from AT&T Stadium in Dallas, Texas, a two-night event. But before we get to who's main eventing WrestleMania, we have to talk about the Royal Rumble. And we'll get to the card in a moment. But, Pat, you know, I kind of want to talk about the significance of the Royal Rumble and, quite frankly, our favorite Royal Rumbles and why they, you know, again, they sort of hold a special place in our hearts. And I'll start it off with saying, you know, for me, my favorite Royal Rumble was 1996. And probably our audience is thinking, well, what makes that so unique? Well, it was the first Royal Rumble where the participants came out to their music. That had never happened before.
Yeah.
Only when entrance number one and two from 1988 until 1993 did you hear that music for the respective wrestlers. But once the, you know, obviously it's fluctuated over the years. We've had every 90 seconds, every 30 seconds, if you remember, from 1995, even up to 2 minutes in the early Royal Rumbles. But again, it was always the wrestler coming out pretty much after the buzzer to no music. Once 96 came around, and that was a great job by Vince to do that. I think that added an even bigger allure to the event itself. And, of course, we've had a lot of memorable entrances, but the music is really what I would argue is what makes the Rumble match, not just for the men but also for the women. I mean, let's be honest, back in 2020, after a 9-year hiatus, when Edge returned, and it was rumored, you know, it wasn't confirmed, but he was one of the surprises. I mean, I can imagine what that building felt like when you heard his song. I think that's what really makes the Rumble match so unique. It's because of the musical entrances. And again, 1996 was the first year that they did that. And from here on in, they've never stopped it. So that's my favorite Royal Rumble, though, Patrick.
Absolutely. I got to agree with you, Fernando. I think it's a real game changer. I mean, think about how it affected, you know, every Royal Rumble after that. And now, even in most recent memory, you know, you have Edge, you know, you have the infamous return of John Cena, which my buddy Chris out there, if he's listening, I'm sure he is, he said that I popped, but I mean, I don't know. I'm no selling that, but I might have. Anyway, not the point. Point is that it definitely made a big difference for the Royal Rumble in general moving forward, and really added a sense of anticipation. You know, I mean, AJ Styles, too, he was another one. Nobody really knew what the music was, but then when you see the graphic, you know, it's just really, really, really big stuff. I mean, Ronda Rousey as well. I believe that was what, 2019, if I'm not mistaken.
That was 2018. I was actually there in Philadelphia. I know. I mean, I needed a tennis shot when I left Philadelphia from being there. But she came out after Asuka had won the inaugural Women's Royal Rumble there at the Wells Fargo Center. And of course, when she showed up, sort of to, you know, initiate herself to the WWE Universe. I mean, that was a big pop. So, I mean, again, music has made it such a memorable type of event. It's that
Absolutely.
Pay-per-view that people really, again, pay-per-view, ladies and gentlemen, yeah, stay with me, folks, at home, again, let's keep it. It's one of those things where, again, I would just say it's changed just the way we look at the Rumble and how, as fans, the anticipation builds with every entrant that's coming in, all 30 men, now all 30 women. I would argue that's my favorite Rumble of all time, though. What's yours?
My personal favorite is actually 1985, the year before, the Royal Rumble match itself. Shawn Michaels, my favorite all time. And just the way it ended, you know, with the feet thing and both of them hanging off the ropes and all that other stuff. I'm thinking about the Luger and Bret one. My bad. Shawn hanging over, his foot not touching it. And that in itself, I feel, added another dimension to the Royal Rumble, kind of similar to the impact of the theme music. And future generations later on, you see a lot of these guys kind of hang in there, you know, with the one foot, not letting the other foot touch the floor. And then obviously people like Kofi Kingston, Naomi, so many other people would just really take it to another level and become incredibly creative with it. But 95 for me, it was just fantastic. My very personal favorite Royal Rumble.
I mean, listen, great choice there. Obviously, it was the first time that someone who drew number one lasted to the end. So, I mean, that's another special significance, too. It hasn't happened too often. If I'm not mistaken, it's only happened three times, Patrick. It happened with Shawn Michaels in 95.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it happened with Chris
Benoit.
Well,
he was the first one to do it, if I'm not mistaken, correct? He was the first one.
Yes. Yeah, and there's only been three in the history, in the 34 years of the Royal Rumble,
mm-hmm.
There's only been three guys to draw number one and be there at the end and be victorious. Obviously, it was Shawn Michaels in 95, 2004, the infamous, you know, Chris Benoit drew number one and lasted until the end. And then obviously last year, Edge drew number one and won the Royal Rumble. So it's kind of a unique company. It doesn't happen very often, but who knows? Maybe it could happen this year. We don't know. We'll get to the match card again, folks. But real quick, same sort of on past Rumbles. Now, we've talked about our favorite Rumbles. Let's talk about what arguably the best Royal Rumble. And I'll go with 2000. I would argue in 2000,
yeah.
I remember being there. Top to bottom, if you look at that card, ladies and gentlemen, whether it was the tables match between the Hardys and the Dudleys, whether it was the tag team title match between the New Age Outlaws and the Acolytes, whether it was the triple threat for the Undisputed Intercontinental Championship between Bob Holly, the late great China, and Chris Jericho, and even the street fight for the World Wrestling Federation Championship between Cactus Jack and Triple H, and then obviously the Rumble match itself with The Rock drawing a late number. I believe it was 23 or 24, if I'm not mistaken. And
yep.
A little controversy with The Rock. Obviously, him and The Big Show were the last two participants. But, you know, that controversy set up arguably the rest of that spring to lead into WrestleMania. So top to bottom, I would just say the 2000 Royal Rumble, probably the best Royal Rumble I've ever seen.
I agree with you 100%, Professor. Based on all the previous Royal Rumbles that we've seen, this one, top to bottom, is a pretty stacked card. And I kind of hate to do a disservice to the card right now by highlighting two specific matches, particularly the tables elimination tag team match between the Dudleys and the Hardy Boys. That match was just insane. I mean, the spots that, you know, the table spots between them. I remember one part, if I'm not mistaken, it was like Matt did a move to the outside. And then he crashed through the table. Then Jeff went and tried to do another move onto Devon and crashed through the table. And then obviously the big finish at the end where Jeff, you know, did the swanton off of one of the landings at Madison Square Garden on Bubba Ray through a table to win the match. And then the WWF title match between Triple H, who at this point, I feel personally, this was Triple H's peak. I mean, I know other times, you know, later on in his career, he had some fantastic matches, but when he was really feeling it, I mean, and he was just in tip-top shape. And anytime he and Mick Foley got together, you knew it was going to be a classic, especially when there was weapons involved and they could beat the crap out of each other. But yeah, absolutely. I would agree that that is without a doubt probably the best Royal Rumble card we've ever seen.
Yeah, man, I'm with you. And just to piggyback on your point about Triple H, I mean, that was also sort of a delicate time for Vince McMahon because Austin had just been sort of written out of the storylines because of neck surgery the previous fall. And it was really up to The Rock and Triple H and to some extent, you know, Mick Foley to carry the WWF at that time. Again, there was no Austin. You know, Austin from pretty much 97 up until that point was the leading money guy for the WWF at the time. I mean, he was selling in merch. He was getting, I mean, again, the reason people got rich during the Attitude Era was because of Stone Cold Steve Austin. And not having him there for that Royal Rumble, that was sort of a turning point, I think, for Vince and the way that he looked at, okay, what can I do with these guys? And credit to Triple H. He took the ball. He ran with it. Vince put the belt on him. He had a lot of meaningful feuds. Obviously, that Royal Rumble against Cactus Jack the following month at Hell in a Cell, at, you know, No Way Out, obviously retiring Mick Foley, Cactus Jack during that time. I mean, Triple H had a really good run with the belt, and I think it sort of was, you know, it was a good gamble. Obviously, we knew how hot The Rock was. He was super over. But you know what? It made sense to put the belt on a heel during that time period. So Triple H, I think, again, doesn't get enough credit for during a time when people were worried about the business. Again, WWF was far exceeding WCW at the time. You know, Triple H, I think, really did an exceptional job with his run as champion, again, during that Royal Rumble and, of course, for the rest of the spring.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think that between he and Mick Foley, that would probably be their best matchup that they've ever had. And they've had some pretty good matches. I mean, you can remember further back, you know, even that match on Monday Night Raw that they had, the street fight, coincidentally, in Madison Square Garden. But in my opinion, I just feel like that one was the best. The pacing, the storytelling, everything that they did, the finish, you know, he pedigreed Mick on the thumbtacks. And again, just the significance of being in Madison Square Garden.
Well, yeah, it's the mecca of professional wrestling. So, I mean, to have it there, and obviously it was sold out. It was, again, I would argue the best Royal Rumble I've seen in these 34 years. But again, who knows? Maybe, you know, next Saturday night, I changed my mind, and, you know, so we'll see. But speaking of next Saturday night, obviously, Patrick, you know,
actually,
we're looking at a pretty
Before yeah. You mention that, Professor, can I just add one more thing?
Sure.
For me, another one that I feel kind of is slightly underrated is the 1999 Royal Rumble. The 1999
nice.
Royal Rumble,
nice
actually,
one.
I would say, is one of the better ones, and it was interesting that they were back-to-back, you know, like, you know, two great Royal Rumbles, I would think. The card wasn't as good as the 2000 Royal Rumble. You had the Big Boss Man against Road Dogg in a non-title match. I believe Road Dogg was hardcore champ at the time. You had an intercontinental title match between Ken Shamrock and the Badass Billy Gunn. You also had a WWF European European title match between X-Pac, the champion, and Gangrel. You had a WWF World Women's title match between Sable and Luna. And Sable, you know, obviously wasn't fantastic, but she was fantastic to look at. And then you have the title match, the I Quit match between Mick Foley going in as champion against The Rock. And that match, I mean, I would say up until that point for WWF, I mean, and there's been quite a few afterwards. I mean, another one that comes to memory, I would say, is probably JBL and Eddie Guerrero. But it was one of the bloodiest, most brutal.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Most violent, most brutal, and was also subject of the Beyond the Mat documentary that came out at the time as well. And then obviously
right.
the Royal Rumble match with Vince McMahon winning the Royal Rumble. So that was another one. And
yeah,
not only that, but it really – yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I can still remember to this day the gash on Mick Foley's cranium. Watching that and Beyond the Mat, seeing the reactions of his wife and his children. Again, and this is a time where, you know, the internet was still a little bit, you know, in its infancy. You know, people were kind of still reading the dirt sheets instead of tangibly in paper. They could read it on websites. You know, there was still some element of kayfabe, Patrick. So when we saw Beyond the Mat, I think that arguably that kind of started the cycle, or at least sort of planting of the seeds of breaking up kayfabe forever, where we started seeing backstage footage of these things and, the fact of, you know, Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, going up to Mick Foley apologizing because of, you know, how severe those chair shots were and backstage stuff. I mean, I would argue that Beyond the Mat, again, because of the Royal Rumble, started, well, some would argue probably the downward spiral, right, of sort of the disintegration of kayfabe forever.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And I think even before that, I would go back to maybe even Wrestling with Shadows. And
very
a lot
good,
of the
yeah.
stuff that was coming out back then, there was quite a few exposés going on in wrestling. And then, if I recall correctly, there was some sort of television program or a VHS tape that came out, and it was like Secrets of Pro Wrestling Exposed. And that was actually a big thing. And I really felt like that kind of set the business back some. That's a whole other ball of wax that we could talk about on another day.
No, definitely. But you called it great on the 99 Royal Rumble. Again, not the best card, the undercard per se, other than the title match. But the significance, obviously, right, we were thinking, you know, Austin had won back-to-back Rumbles, even though the first Rumble in 97 was still under some dispute, right? But he won in 98.
Right.
And you thought, okay, he was entrant number one. He was going to win again. And, of course, obviously, they had to set it up that way. You had to have Vince McMahon win because of interference from The Rock. Again, a little asterisk there, by the way, for our audience, in case they forgot. But, yeah, in the record books, it does say Vince McMahon won the Royal Rumble. So, I mean, if that didn't even heighten the feud even more, and, again, arguably the greatest heel in the history of professional wrestling, Vince McMahon, and arguably the greatest face at the time, Stone Cold Steve Austin, I mean, I think that Rumble really – continued, you know, the trajectory that WWF at the time was on and what the Attitude Era was doing. So definitely a good pick for sure. Patrick, let's get to the card next Saturday night. I think stacked from top to bottom here. I mean, we're looking at the Raw tag team titles will be on the line. Not sure if this will kick off the program or maybe be during the kickoff show. Who knows? You know, again, it depends on, you know, how they sort of schedule the pay-per-view, right? I mean, it's already 8 o'clock.
Right.
It might be on during the pre-show. But Alpha Academy, you know, Chad Gable and Otis won the tag titles from RK-Bro, Randy Orton and Matt Riddle on Raw not too long ago. It seems like, you know, the plan seems to be for Randy Orton and Matt Riddle to eventually break up, whether it's during this match or in the Rumble match itself. But I seriously doubt that, you know, they just put the belts on Alpha Academy. I think Otis and Chad Gable have been a really, I mean, they've been kind of hot lately. I think they're kind of over his heels. You know, they're two great athletes in their own right. I mean, one's a former, you know, Olympic wrestler. The other one's another amateur wrestler. I think the four guys have great chemistry. It should be another good match for the Raw Tag Team titles. I would argue probably, again, who knows? Vince has been known to swerve us. Who knows? But I would probably argue Alpha Academy is going to retain at the Royal Rumble.
I think it's a safe bet. You know, those are two guys for me that have been severely underrated. Otis really made everything kind of work for him. And Chad Gable, no matter what, just figures out a way to be able to do his thing. I feel like we got to kind of start building up that hype, that beef. That heat between Randy Orton and Matt Riddle, and what better place to kind of get that feud going than the Royal Rumble?
You know, I'm with you. I think it's a great way to sort of build up, as you said, that potential feud with, let's be honest, you know, Matt Riddle is a guy that has come a long way from his UFC days. He checks up a lot of boxes for Vince McMahon. He's young. He's very athletic. He's very versatile. He's good on the microphone. I mean, I understand the whole kind of happy-go-lucky personality. I mean, for people that know about Matt Riddle, obviously we know he's a dedicated consumer of cannabis. You know, I think Vince McMahon has kind of, you know, kind of walked that tightrope a little bit in the sense of, you know, sort of accelerating Matt Riddle's, I think, attributes as a worker on the mic. I don't think Vince is really ready yet to sort of push a full-blown sort of pothead angle. I'm not saying Matt Riddle is, but I don't think Vince is there yet, even though – well, yeah, no, you're right, he has. And I don't think Vince McMahon is ready to sort of just push that out there, like, blatantly and overtly, where, you know, again, it's a publicly traded company. I know Vince is very careful about image. But Riddle and Randy Orton, I think, potentially, you break them up, they could tear down the house at WrestleMania because it seems like that's what they're building towards.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I mean, when I first saw it, a lot of people were kind of confused. And as far as Matt Riddle goes, you either like the gimmick or you don't. But once you see the guy in the ring, you see he's really got the chops. You see he can really go. He obviously has a UFC background. He's a legitimate badass. And, you know, couple that with the fact that he's willing to put himself out there as a personality. He's easy to give directions to. He's got a great look. And, you know, Randy is obviously somebody that, let's be real, for the better part of 20 years, and you've even mentioned this before. I mean, who's had a better body of work consistently over 20 years? You know, a lot of people will argue about all these booger-eating marks and stuff like that because he doesn't know the lucha twist of Stan Capistrano or whatever. You know, he's not this great wrestler because he hasn't wrestled in Arena Mexico. And, yeah, you could be a great wrestler and wrestle in Arena Mexico, but you can also be a great wrestler and wrestle in the WWE. And I'm sorry, but Randy Orton is one of the best wrestlers in the world. And what better guy for Matt Riddle to be paired with and to potentially have a WrestleMania moment?
Pat, I'm with you, and we've had this conversation off the air, and I've always said, I know that when people start talking about GOATs or people start talking about Mount Rushmore or people start talking about, you know, top five all time, you know, I get it. You know, the accolades go to John Cena because of the number of title wins, the amount of merch he has sold, sort of, you know, his crossover now to mainstream pop culture as a movie star. You know, he's been that guy that Vince has depended on for more than 15 years. You know, not the best wrestler. I would argue he's not the best worker. I know people talk about, you know, from that era coming out of OVW, Ohio Valley Wrestling, you know, whether it was Brock Lesnar, whether it was Batista, Cena, and Randy Orton. I mean, to some extent, Shelton Benjamin, too, because he was part of that class. But I would argue for a body of work, I mean – listen, I've never been in love with his mic skills. He's been a little monotone at times, a little robotic, but it's hard to argue a guy who's won, I believe, 14 championships, a guy that has been a solid heel, a better heel than a face, I would argue, in his career. You want to talk about a guy that is out of that class, out of Lesnar, out of Cena, out of Batista, out of Benjamin. To some extent, I would argue that Randy Orton has been the best worker of that class from OVW to sort of kick off the ruthless aggression era. I think it's hard to argue. Randy Orton is that guy. And you know what? To sort of use a phrase you like to use a lot off the air with me, we better give Randy Orton his roses now. I mean, there's been some reports. His body's kind of deteriorating. It's so many years of working this style. He's adapted. We better give Randy Orton his roses now because this is a guy who arguably has been one of the better workers, if not the best worker, of the last 15 years, Patrick.
Absolutely. I mean, he's worked really big shows. He's been a constant for them. I think, and I'll disagree with you, I think John Cena is a good worker, especially John Cena, the later half of his career. The stuff recently obviously hasn't been, you know, amazing, but it's been impactful. You know, and it's done exactly what it's needed to do in terms of getting eyes on the product for WWE. But I mean,
But not better than Randy. Not better than Randy.
I don't know, man. I mean, look, I would say consistently Randy is a better worker, right? But John has had, I mean, some bangers, some great, great matches with Bryan Danielson, with CM Punk, with Edge, with Randy. You know, and he's been able, and, you know, Shawn Michaels, I mean, you know, Triple H, I mean, he's worked a lot of fantastic guys throughout his career, John. And then later on, his matches with AJ Styles, I mean, that series that they had, that's some of the best stuff that WWE's produced. So yeah, I would say consistently Randy would be, but let's not disrespect John Cena completely. I know, you know, the mark in you can't help yourself and you might have to, but. You know,
well, I know.
Let's give John Cena his due as well.
You're right about that. I think that, you know, we've been spoiled watching Randy Orton for 15 years, being as good of a worker as there is for almost a better part of two decades now. And again, I've never been in love with his mic skills. That's not him. He's not meant to be bombastic. He's not meant to be a Stone Cold Steve Austin or a Rock or even Cena.
I don't think he's terrible. I Exactly. He gets his point across, but, you know, some of his delivery is for lack of a better term, venomous. You know,
he kind of sinister.
Yeah, absolutely. So he can play that part well, but, I mean, if you give him a mic and you tell him to talk, I mean, it's not going to – you're not going to really get that. And John, obviously, you know, beats him out in that regard, you know?
No, I agree. So, I mean, again, I think it's almost inevitable that Matt Riddle and Randy Orton will – that team will be sort of disintegrate, obviously, whether it's during the tag team title match at the Rumble next Saturday night or in the Rumble match itself. That remains to be seen. But, again, I figure Alpha Academy will go over there. They're kind of having a nice little run as a heel tag team. It would make sense to kind of keep the belts on them for a little bit. We'll see if it stays through WrestleMania season, but let's find – we'll see. Moving up in the card here, Pat, we got the mixed tag team match. The Miz and his wife, Maryse, battle Edge, Adam Copeland, and his real-life wife, Beth Phoenix. You know, this is a match you could tell that they've been teasing for a while. The minute that Edge and The Miz were put together to work a program, you kind of figured, hey, this seems almost inevitable. And again, you know, people might not like hearing this. I mean, I think Miz has come a long way since his days on MTV in the real world. I think he's become a much better worker. Excellent on the mic. Another guy who's a better heel than a face. I think that him and Maryse have been that sort of heel couple that people love to hate. And let's be honest, you know, since Edge has come back in 2020, he's been that guy that people love to watch. He's inspiring. He's having a great run late in his career now in his mid to late 40s. And, you know, Beth Phoenix, again, I've never been a fan of hers per se. I've hated her on NXT on commentary. Thank God she was taken off. But, you know, she's a great worker, has been a great role model for women in the locker room for a better part of a decade. You know, on paper, this looks like a really entertaining match, but I don't think it will be. I think it might be a squash with Edge and Beth Phoenix just absolutely annihilating the Miz and Maryse, but I've been wrong before.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of however they want to book it. We don't really know what's planned for Edge for WrestleMania or even Miz. To me personally, this kind of seems like it's like a bucket list item for Edge and for Beth and for Miz and Maryse. You know, all four of them obviously being workers, former champions, you know, it's kind of cool for them to be able to tag with their significant other and have this big exhibition match at the Royal Rumble. So, yeah, it should be fun. I think the build has been pretty good leading up to it. And Edge, you know, I mean, what can you say about Edge? I mean, like, that hasn't already been said. Edge is really a guy that kind of held it together for WWE and had those great matches with John Cena and was a really just top-level heel. I mean, whether it was his Money in the Bank cash-in, you know, or his cash-ins, and just his work in general, Edge was definitely a guy that really was carrying a bulk of the work and the load there at WWE, and his promo skills are fantastic, too. What for me, top five promo guy all time.
I'm with you.
You know, and
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, it should be a fun match. It should absolutely be a fun match. And I'm happy that, you know, these workers get to have these matches with their significant others and, you know, make a little moolah.
Well, at the same time, too, I think the entrances might be kind of interesting. Again, the Dome at America Center in St. Louis is a pretty big building, you know. I mean, obviously WWE has made a point to start holding the Rumbles in big, big facilities, obviously, not just the arenas like they used to. We all know back in 2020. They had it, if I'm not mistaken, in Houston at Minute Maid Park, the home of the Asterix. I'm sorry, the Houston Astros. The Cheaters, that's right. Well, I call them the Asterix. It just seems a little trendy. But back in 2019, I believe it was in Chase Field in Arizona where Major League Baseball's Arizona Diamondbacks play. So I think Vince is kind of taking a liking to having the Rumble in these big buildings, long entrance, right, which is kind of what you want for the Rumble, right? Again, it sort of goes back to we love the pageantry of the Royal Rumble, the entrances, the music, the anticipation, that sort of that long walk for the men and women to get to the ring. If you remember back in 2020 when Brock Lesnar started off number one, I mean, obviously you watched, you know, guy after guy come out. It was like sort of that long walk to the ring, like, oh, my God, I got to face Brock Lesnar. I think Vince is taking a liking to these buildings. So when it comes to a match like, you know, Miz and Maurice against Edge and Beth Phoenix, I think that if for nothing else, Patrick, whether it's the Gangrel, you know, the Brood entrance for Edge, maybe Edge and Beth come out together under fire, as they say, you know, with the Brood entrance. Maybe Miz and Maurice, being that they're Mrs. Hollywood, maybe it's a grandiose entrance. I don't know. I think that's unfortunately, that's probably going to be the only compelling thing about the match.
Well, I don't think so, man. I think they're all professionals, and I think they're going to come in and they're going to have a decent match with everything going into it. I mean, obviously, I'm not expecting, you know, a five-star or seven-star match, wink, wink. But, you know, I think it's going to be exactly what it needs to be. You know, these people are all professionals, and with a crowd that big, they're going to deliver, they're going to get a lot of heat, and it should be fun.
Well, absolutely. And again, we just saw a recent mixed tag match, and we'll get to our roundup a little bit later this past week. And I mean, let's hope that this mixed tag match is a little bit better than what we saw in AEW this past Wednesday, which we'll get to. But again, should be entertaining, as you said. Absolutely. Moving on to the Raw Women's Championship, Becky Lynch will defend against, and this name just drives me crazy, against Doudrop. Doudrop earned her title shot by defeating both Liv Morgan and Bianca Belair in a triple threat match on Raw recently. We know that both Morgan and Belair have had programs with Becky Lynch in recent months, going back to SummerSlam, going back to day one earlier this month for Liv Morgan. A shout out to her. She's from Elmwood Park, New Jersey, just about, you know, nearby Bergen County for us, Patrick. So, you know, got to love Liv Morgan.
Can I give her the funk master flex?
There you go. Absolutely. You know, listen, since the release of Nia Jax, it seems like Doudrop checks off the boxes, that monster heel on the women's side. Obviously, you know, I mean, I don't care how this sounds, not the most.
But she's not a heel in this program. She's actually a face.
Really? Oh, okay. Well, okay. Well,
yeah.
But again, you know,
Becky's the heel.
No, well, that's right. Yeah. And, you know, Doudrop checks off a lot of boxes now, being that, you know, sort of heavy set female wrestler that's athletic, that is someone they want to push to kind of, you know, have, I would argue, Becky Lynch win in a way that, you know, she kind of beats the odds. She's overpowered probably most of the match. That's kind of how I anticipate this being booked. And, you know, Becky's obviously held the belt for some time. She hasn't lost, I think, a match in God knows more, almost two full calendar years now. It would seem that Becky is going to hold on to the title next Saturday night against Doudrop. Who she faces leading up to WrestleMania remains to be seen. We'll get to that in a minute. But I don't anticipate Vince kind of disrupting, you know, this pendulum and this momentum that Becky Lynch is on right now as big time Bex.
No, I definitely don't. Doudrop actually is a fantastic performer. I think she wrestled under the name Piper Nevin before she was given the name Doudrop. But, you know, she can go. She comes from a great background. And she's somebody that I think Becky is going to probably maybe have a sleeper with. I really believe it because, I mean, she can really work. She's eager. This is a big crowd. And I think that she and Becky are going to be in a position where people are going to kind of sleep on this match a little bit. And I think they could come in and they could possibly steal it on the women's end. We don't know. But I fully expect Becky to retain. And I don't see Becky dropping the title until WrestleMania, which, you know, I'll kind of get into my Royal Rumble pick afterwards. But, yeah, I think this is going to be a really underrated match, honestly.
You know what? I'm with you on that. I think it's a match. It might kick off the pay-per-view itself next Saturday night. You definitely want to be able to, you know, start the program with a title match and one that's going to obviously get the fans energized for the rest of the evening. So, again, I anticipate Becky retaining who she'll face in the next couple of weeks remains to be seen. But that'll be interesting, though, Pat, for sure. Let's get to the other big title match, well, two other title matches. We have the Universal Championship will be on the line. The guy who's the head of the table, the guy who, in my opinion, should have been the number one ranked wrestler in the Pro Wrestling Illustrated Top 100, as well as any other wrestling publication. I mean, if you have eyes, you can see that Roman Reigns, for a better part of, you know, more than a calendar year, has been the perennial draw in WWE, has had amazing matches, defeating all comers. Again, his heel turn has been one of the better ones, I think, in recent memory. And, you know, he'll defend the title against Seth Rollins, a former Universal Champion himself. And, you know, former members of The Shield, obviously that's been talked about a lot. You know, this match is kind of hard to call. And Pat, I got to say, though, you know, Roman Reigns has been booked so strongly since winning the Universal Championship from, at the time, during the Triple Threat match, from Bray Wyatt and Braun Strowman. He's been just, you know, he's leading in merch sales. He's the number one draw in the WWE. I think that goes without saying. No disrespect to Brock Lesnar, but a guy who's been on TV consistently since August of 2020 and is not, he has looked as strong as anybody. I would argue Roman Reigns is going to retain, but it seems like Vince sometimes likes to swerve us. You know, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Seth Rollins wins, but at the same time, it's like, wait a minute. Roman Reigns has defeated everybody and their mother for the last, I don't know, 16 months or so. To lose to Seth Rollins, I don't know. I think it kind of diminishes who else he has faced during this run, whether it's John Cena, Brock Lesnar. And again, some of these matches he's won the way it's been booked, where, you know, he's needed his cousins, the Usos, to help him. Sometimes he's won on his own. But I seriously doubt that Vince is ready to take the belt off of Roman Reigns. He is the head of the table. He's the tribal chief. He's the guy that – he's the one, you know, and people don't want to admit it. You know, obviously we have wrestling, quote, journalists like Dave Meltzer and others saying, well, you know, Kenny Omega and others have had a better year. No, for a full calendar year, if not a full 16 months, Roman Reigns has been the best wrestler in the world. And I think with that, I think he'll retain next Saturday night against Seth Rollins.
I'm kind of a little torn about this one, but I think the most interesting thing about this match is the fact that there's so many questions surrounding it. I mean, it's not just really this predictable kind of phone it in, quote unquote, lazy booking. It's kind of like, wait a minute, what's going to happen here? Because now if Seth wins, then Seth takes that title and defends it here. Then what happens to Roman? Does Roman enter the Rumble? Or, hey, if Roman keeps this, then what's going to happen with another match? You know, like, so there's tons and tons of questions. They're piquing curiosity, which I think is fantastic. I'm sure the marks are still going to complain anyway because they complain anyway. But they're trying to kind of create an interesting storyline here. And the way that they've booked these guys for, I don't know, I guess the last decade or so, you know, Seth has always kind of outsmarted Roman. You know, Roman's been this dominant superstar, this, you know, immediate main eventer. And, you know, Rollins has been a main eventer as well, but he's kind of had to, you know, scratch and claw and win it in underhanded fashion. So in terms of the storytelling, I mean, I think it's fantastic. I know that they're going to deliver. I have no doubt in my mind that they're going to knock it out of the park. But it's too close for me, and I got to kind of see what happens here. I mean, it's an intriguing matchup, and I think as wrestling fans, whether you're a casual, a hardcore, whatever you want to call yourself, this is what you want, and especially, you know, with WWE and leading up to WrestleMania.
Absolutely. And again, Roman's been that guy that, you know, different publications will say otherwise, but, you know, if we have eyes, and we both do, and my eyesight's pretty good, it's actually 2020, and, you know, you watch the body of work of Roman Reigns since August of 2020, when he turned heel, I'm sorry, no one's had a better run over a period of 16 months than Roman Reigns. I mean, he has literally been that guy with the Universal title on SmackDown. He's been that guy that's beat all comers. You kind of figure he would probably carry that title into WrestleMania in Dallas in early April. But again, there's a lot of weeks between now and WrestleMania. You know, I'm with you. I think it's kind of hard to call. But if you ask me what my gut tells me, I think Roman Reigns retains. And, you know, again, sets up what should be a very interesting road to WrestleMania on the SmackDown brand.
Absolutely. I think it's everything we need. And you know, in regards to, you know, certain publications and, you know, they're number one and all that stuff. I know you say that if you have eyes, you know, obviously Roman's the guy, but You know, maybe if somebody's lining your pockets with money, you might sway your opinion like some other people.
Yeah.
But
that's true. I mean, it's definitely going to be a match to watch. And obviously the other title match will be the WWE title on the line with Brock Lesnar, who just won the title at day one in the Fatal Five Way against Bobby Lashley, Big E, Seth Rollins, and Kevin Owens, respectively. He'll be defending against Bobby Lashley. And this is a match where, let's be honest, a lot of people have been dreaming about this for years. You know, obviously the stars didn't align for a while when Brock Lesnar left the WWF at the time in WWE in 2004. We started seeing Bobby Lashley, you know, creep on the scene in 2005, 2006. And, you know, their paths never crossed. Obviously, two guys with big MMA backgrounds, obviously Lesnar with UFC, Bobby Lashley in Bellator and in some other MMA promotions. But, you know, once Lesnar returned and kind of was a mainstay on the roster, and once Lashley, you know, left Impact Wrestling in 2017 and went to the WWE, people were waiting for this match at some point. You know, will Lesnar ever face Lashley? Well, guess what? All the fans, the marks, they're getting their wish now next Saturday night. I would argue that, you know, Bobby Lashley's been on a good run. I think last year, I think it's very underrated how good of a title run he had when he beat Drew McIntyre, headlined WrestleMania last year in Tampa, and pretty much held the belt for the rest of the year up until probably, you know, the summertime into early fall when he lost it to Big E, when Big E cashed in. You know, the conventional wisdom would say, you know what, Bobby Lashley's really hot right now, put the belt on Lashley, but Lesnar draws. And I know people got upset earlier this month at the Fatal Five Way. Why would you take the belt off of Big E? Why would you do that? Why would you minimize him and Owens and Rollins? No, I'm sorry, Brock Lesnar's a draw. And you know what? Vince is a businessman. You want to sell shirts, Suplex City, on whatever Raw he'll be on. I'm sorry, Lesnar puts people in seats. Not the other guys don't necessarily do that in the same manner that Brock Lesnar does. I think Brock Lesnar retains, Patrick.
I could see Brock Lesnar retaining again. I mean, it's so fascinating. There's so many different questions kind of swirling about. So, I mean, are we going to have a title versus title match? I mean, what's going to happen at WrestleMania? So, I find it interesting. I know this has been a dream match for so long for so many people, but I feel like the timing is just right. I feel like Bobby Lashley, like you said, you know, especially with the last couple of years and his, you know, his return to WWE, he's really been on his A game. And I feel like this is the best Bobby Lashley we're seeing right now. And I feel like Brock Lesnar is Brock Lesnar. And I like the backgrounds of both athletes. I feel like they're going to beat the shit out of each other. I feel like they're going to pound each other to exist out of existence. But it's going to make for a fantastic match, and I'm excited for it. And again, more questions than just people going, well, you know, I knew that was going to happen. No, did you? I don't know. You know, this is going to be great. I think this card could potentially go down as one of the all-time great Royal Rumble cards, top to bottom.
I'm with you. And I'll even add this. I strongly suspect that, again, folks, I haven't read this. No one is feeding me spoilers. You know, I have great sources, but not like other journalists, especially in the pro wrestling scene. But here's a prediction. I really, really think that Reigns is going to retain. I think Reigns is going, because I guess that ongoing animosity we're seeing with Heyman kind of being that pawn in between, that sort of tug of war between Lesnar and Reigns, I have a feeling the Usos are going to interfere. They're going to cost Lesnar the championship against Lashley somehow. Something tells me that. And Lesnar's going to knock somebody out. He's going to enter the Rumble match. And he wants revenge because Reigns cost him the title. And Lesnar's going to enter the Rumble, win it, and challenge Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship at WrestleMania. That's a sneaky suspicion I have, Patrick.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you. I think overall, you know, that seems like the best course, and I feel like that puts the title on Bobby, and then Bobby could defend the title at WrestleMania. Maybe he could have a rematch with Big E. You know, something could happen there. But I feel like, you know, putting them in that position, it makes it better. You know, and I just think that Brock is a face. You got to run with it. I mean, look, people can complain all they want about the booking decision with taking the title off of Big E, but that crowd was hot. They were into that. And anything that Brock Lesnar does is going to generate a lot of interest. And you're going into WrestleMania, and I know a lot of people like to make stuff about the tickets and, oh, buy one, get one free. Look, everybody does buy one, get one free. The Yankees do buy one, get one free. The Cowboys, the Knicks, the Lakers, anybody, you name them, any top team in the world, Real Madrid, anybody, they do buy one, get one free ticket deals, okay, because they want to pack the people in. And they want people to spend money on merchandise and concessions. That's the key. And Vince McMahon's in a position where he doesn't really need that. You know, he'd rather just generate more money for his company and merchandise sales. And I don't know. I just feel like that's a compelling matchup. But yeah, I mean, that would be cool. That'd be great for Bobby. That would be a huge rub for Bobby going into WrestleMania. You know, I'd like to see maybe Big E get a little more time somewhere down the line. I don't know if it's going to happen now. I don't know if it's going to happen at WrestleMania, but you know, but we'll see. I mean, either way, I just think that again, it's creating possibilities. It's piquing curiosity. And that's really what you want for your big shows, you know, coming up.
It really, really is. And I think that, listen, Vince has a lot of different angles he can work here in the way he wants to book the Rumble and kind of wants to book again the road to WrestleMania in Dallas coming up in early April. Pat, we look at the Royal Rumble itself. Let's start off with the women's match. A lot of intrigue there. Some very interesting names. Obviously, we all know Carmella, former SmackDown Women's Champion, Dana Brooke, the current 24/7 champion. We have Nikki A.S.H., almost a superhero. We have Queen Zelina, co-holder of the women's tag team titles. Of course, we have Rhea Ripley, Tamina, Aaliyah. Raw Women's Champion Charlotte Flair has decided to enter the Rumble match, maybe trying to emulate a little bit of what Brock Lesnar did in 2020, kind of like win the Rumble match and then sort of decide her challenger. We'll see. We have Naomi, Natalya. These are the names announced so far. Shayna Baszler, Shotzi, WWE Hall of Famers, Brie and Nikki Bella. Lita, also a Hall of Famer, is entering the Women's Royal Rumble. Kelly, Michelle McCool, the wife, obviously, of The Undertaker, who hopefully will be maybe headlining the Hall of Fame this year since it is in Texas, and we know how much he loves Dallas. We all know. We watched the Last Ride documentary. We'll see, but Summer Rae, Bianca Belair, Liv Morgan. But here's a name that's interesting, though, and again, you know, I'm a little sentimental about it because I am Mr. Impact in Hudson County here in New Jersey, but it was mind-boggling. It was mind-boggling to see on SmackDown Mickey James's name be mentioned, and of course, Pat McAfee during that broadcast openly saying, yes, the Impact Women's World Champion, Mickey James, will be in the Royal Rumble. You know, Tony Khan talked about the Forbidden Door, but is this really not going to be the Forbidden Door since Mickey James is going to enter the Women's Royal Rumble?
I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I think it's really cool. I think it's interesting for sure. It definitely puts an experienced worker in there to work with a lot of these young girls. And, you know, for any young girl out there that's going to be in this match, it gives you an opportunity to get a rub, you know, for eliminating her and, you know, kind of helps your career in a positive way. But I don't know, man. I don't know what to make of it. You know what I mean? I think we just need to take it one show at a time. It's interesting that they mentioned her as a champion for another company. So, you know, we could be seeing perhaps maybe a casual relationship. We can't tell. But there's definitely a lot of things going on in the professional wrestling world behind the scene and sports entertainment that are going to have interesting implications in the next couple of years. But for me, in that match, if I had to really pick, I would pick Bianca Belair because I feel like the story tells itself. Bianca versus Becky, you know, especially from SummerSlam and stuff like that and what happened. I feel like that's an interesting stage for her to compete in. And Sasha Banks being out too kind of add something else to it. Maybe Bayley could come back and even win it. We don't know. There's been reports of Bayley getting healthy recently. Or we could possibly have the return of Rowdy Ronda Rousey. And I think that creates another interesting matchup for Becky. But if I was booking it, I would have Bianca win. Yeah, Bianca and Becky. and then you have Lita and Charlotte get into it, and you do Lita and Charlotte at WrestleMania. And I think that would be interesting, and I think Charlotte could have a great match with Lita, and it would be something really cool, and it would be something nice, I think, for the fans to see Lita again.
I don't disagree, man. Obviously, we started seeing a little bit of a tease on Raw when Lita showed up, sort of standing her ground against the Raw Women's Champion. That could be interesting. Obviously, the way that they're booking the storyline, you know, Lita saying, hey, I have one more run in me. We've heard that before. I mean, I cringe when I hear those words because we've heard them from Bill Goldberg in the past when he's been on Raw saying those words. So, you know, it kind of makes me
nervous.
What, the guy who's never gotten better in 20 years? Jesus. But you know what?
Gotten better at making money.
Well, okay, well, just because you're making money doesn't necessarily mean great for wrestling. But, I mean, you know, Jesus Christ. But you know, listen, you're right about the Women's Rumble match again, of course. I only gave you a partial list here for our audience. I'm sure there'll be some surprises. Who knows? Maybe some of the women from Impact. Maybe some of the women from other promotions. Maybe just women we haven't seen in quite some time. Again, 30 women, it's going to be a really, really interesting scenario. I'm going to go with a little bit of a different outlook. I'm going to go with Charlotte Flair winning, you know, entering the Rumble, winning, and then selecting her opponent. Now, who's that going to be? That remains to be seen, but I'm going to go with Charlotte Flair winning the Women's Royal Rumble, ultimately to pick her opponent for WrestleMania.
You know what? To piggyback on that, Professor, I think that also creates another interesting matchup between Charlotte and Becky. Because, I mean, you remember that match, the Survivor Series. That was probably one of the most tense matches I think I've ever seen. And whether it was a work or not, those girls were laying it in. And I think that could even create another interesting possibility at WrestleMania. So, again, they're keeping you guessing. They're making you think. They're making you think, folks. So stop complaining. You're still tuned in.
They definitely are. You're absolutely right. You know, the marks will complain. They'll bitch and moan to the high heavens, but they're still going to tune in because it's what they've been preconditioned to. And again, I'm as guilty as anybody, Patrick. You know, I'm as big a fan as there is a mark for some people. But, you know, there are times when I can be objective and, you know, listen, at the end of the day, I'm going to tune into Raw on Monday nights. You know, yeah, I'll watch The Bachelor because, like, who doesn't like watching 30 hot women, you know, competing against each other to try to win the love of a guy, or, you know, whatever else is on television. But I'm still going to tune in, and I'm sure, obviously, that Monday after the Royal Rumble next Saturday will be very interesting because, again, it sets up the road to WrestleMania, of course, which brings us to the men's Royal Rumble match. And interestingly, though, you know, Jackass star Johnny Knoxville was the first man to make the announcement he would be participating. No coincidence, Jackass Forever hits theaters in early February, actually during Super Bowl weekend, coincidentally. He made the announcement via video during day one earlier this month in Atlanta. So he, along with Montez Ford, Angelo Dawkins of the Street Profits, along with Rey Mysterio and his son Dominic, Austin Theory, Sheamus, Damian Priest, AJ Styles, Big E, Happy Corbin, Madcap Moss, Sami Zayn, who just recently resigned, Kofi Kingston, and Kevin Owens will be in the men's Royal Rumble match. Like anything, Patrick, there's maybe some surprises, maybe some returns, maybe some legends, whether it's Booker T, whether maybe it's, who knows, JBL, who knows, maybe it's Jerry the King Lawler, who has no business being in the ring anymore at his age and how frail he is. Again, no disrespect to Jerry. I love Jerry. He shouldn't be getting in the ring anymore. Who knows? Maybe he'll be a surprise.
Corey Graves, man.
That's right. Corey Graves, yes, on commentary. It'd be nice if Byron Saxton joined the Rumble and he could beat the piss out of Byron Saxton after all these years when he's picked on him during commentary. That'd be interesting. This is kind of hard to read because I don't know what's going to happen in the title matches. Again, I still have that theory about what's going to happen. Right now, you know, if you had to kind of put me in a corner and say, Fernando, who do you really go with here? Believe it or not, I think Big E is going to get the win here. I think Big E, a lot of people, a lot of marks online have been very unhappy that, hey, you know, taking the belt off him wasn't cool. It doesn't matter if it's Lesnar, but Lesnar draws house. I think Vince might want to give Big E another run with the title again. It was a bit of an uninspiring title run after he won the title, after he cashed in on Bobby Lashley, which happens a lot. You know, a lot of guys are great chasing the championship, but once you win it, maybe it depends how you're booked. It depends on the reception by the crowd, whether or not they're still on your side. I don't know. I think Big E's going to win the Rumble. I think Vince likes him enough that, you know what, let's give him another try here to chase the championship and ultimately win it. I'm going with Big E next Saturday.
Wow, that's a good pick. I think a lot of the reasons why you think he might win are pretty damn good. I'm going to still go with Brock, and I think we're going to have a full circle moment between he and Sami Zayn, where he goes up to Sami Zayn and reminds him that they're buddies, and then Sami might try to resist, but Brock either beats the shit out of him or Sami backs down altogether and Brock takes his spot and wins the Royal Rumble. I think that would be great for Big E, but regardless, I just have a feeling they're going to end up having a match no matter what. You know, whether it's a match on Raw or whatever they want to put together, I just really feel like that's going to happen. And I just think that, again, like Brock getting screwed, you know, Brock losing the title, entering the Rumble, bitching out Sami Zayn to get into the Rumble, and, you know, running roughshod, I mean, the fans are going to go nuts again. So it's I think, you know, for the crowd and for the type of show that it is, I think that's a really good bet. But yeah, Big E would also be another one too.
I don't disagree. Believe it or not, I think we've seen in previous Rumbles, but it'd be kind of nice maybe if, I don't know, the Raw coming up before next Saturday night, maybe there's a battle royal to see who draws number 30, right? Hasn't that always been a gimmick in the past? I think it's always been interesting. Whoever gets number 30, maybe he's always projected to be like a perennial favorite.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who knows if Vince will do that? Maybe he'll surprise us this Monday.
We don't see that often. Yeah. I absolutely agree. We don't see that. And perhaps we could see it. Another guy that I just want to mention real quick, and ever since we saw him and from when I saw him in Evolve, Austin Theory is a guy that is going to be a main event player in WWE in the future. He just is. He's a young kid. He gets the business.
Yeah.
And they're working on his character side, and I think he's just going to develop into maybe even a John Cena type of guy. You know what I mean? Because he has that ability.
We'll see.
But,
I mean, Vince loves him. Vince loves him. Vince loves doing segments with him. And Vince doesn't just do that with a lot of people. So Vince, obviously, I think knowing what we know about Vince McMahon, he's got to see something in Austin Theory because he's been on TV a lot.
Yeah.
I know a lot of the marks are tired of seeing Vince. Oh, why is Vince on TV? You know, he looks like Walter Mercado, to steal your line, brother. You're right. I mean, Austin Theory checks off a lot of boxes. He's very young. He's good on the microphone. He plays that obnoxious heel very, very well. Kind of incorporates a little bit of, you know, pop culture now where everyone's obsessed with their smartphones and everyone's taking a selfie for everything. Yeah, you know, it's kind of, believe it or not, it just checks off a lot of boxes for Vince. And I think that, you know, just because it pisses off the marks a lot, I think Vince will even advance Austin Theory or push him even more so because I think Vince knows that.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, look, he's coming from the indies. He used to work at Evolve. So, like, why are the marks even getting mad? This is one of your guys. And, you know, we've talked about it a bunch. And I'll say it right now. There is no more toxic relationship in professional wrestling than that of wrestling fans and Vince McMahon. It is a love-hate-love relationship. I mean, it's abusive. It's just, it's awful. But people still keep coming back. You still keep coming back. You still keep giving it another shot. And I think Theory's in a great spot with Vince.
Absolutely. And it's one of those things where, let's be honest, you know, I mean, people are going to tune in no matter what. And, you know, it seems like a lot of the dirt sheets are saying that apparently Austin Theory is going to be in maybe the final four or final five in the ring. That should be interesting. But, you know, it's really, really going to be a great Royal Rumble next Saturday night, folks. Again, you know, the road to WrestleMania begins with that major pay-per-view. Yes, it's still a pay-per-view. I don't care what anyone says. Emanating from the Dome at America Center.
It's a premium live event. It's a premium live event, man. Get it right. It's like WrestleMania Backlash, right? Get it right.
No. It's not sports. It's pro wrestling. I'm old school like that. Hell no. I'm going to call it pro wrestling. But again, comes to you from the Dome at America Center in downtown St. Louis. It's going to be on the Peacock Network. I know a lot of you fans out there, you know, I bitch and moan about the Peacock Network. I hate the plethora of commercials and ads on it. But you know what? For $5 a month, you can't beat that value in terms of watching WWE, all the great movies and TV shows that is based on NBC Universal. So, folks, I don't know what you're doing next Saturday night, but make sure you tune into the Royal Rumble at 8 p.m. on the Peacock Network. Patrick, let's kind of do a little bit of, go around here in the world of professional wrestling. Yes, next Saturday is the road to WrestleMania, but it's not the only pay-per-view along the way. WWE did announce this week that the Elimination Chamber will emanate from the brand new Jeddah Superdome on Saturday night. Again, another Saturday night pay-per-view for the WWE on Saturday, February the 19th. That's President's Day weekend. Certainly, again, another reason to maybe, enjoy the long weekend, to watch the Elimination Chamber. Who knows what happens next Saturday, whoever doesn't win the title match, or maybe we set up an Elimination Chamber match for the men and the women for one of the brands who, let's say, again, that person didn't win their respective Royal Rumble, so they're not going to be challenging for that title. Seems like the brand new Superdome in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, again, I think is going to be just as much of a pay-per-view to watch as next Saturday's Royal Rumble.
Yeah, it's weird. I kind of get the vibe where they're kind of like, it might be a house show in a way, but they also kind of have to like spruce it up a little bit. I don't know if there'll be any title changes. There could be. That would be an interesting swerve. It's about time. I think they're going to end up taking everything out there, at least all the big gimmicks. And, Vince working in Saudi Arabia, honoring his contract, whether people like it or not.
Yeah, I mean, again, not to get overly political here, but, the optics are, we know what an oppressive regime it is in Saudi Arabia. And Vince, he's a businessman. He's not the first businessman to do business with an oppressive regime across the world. He's going to be the last one. So for better or for worse, WWE makes a lot of money going to Jeddah. They've made a lot of money with this long-term contract with the Saudi government. And you know what? I kind of hope it goes back to the days of, after the Rumble, the Elimination Chamber in February, right? Whether it was under No Way Out, right? Which I wish they would bring back that pay-per-view name. But the Elimination Chamber was just as exciting because that also set up WrestleMania with, hey, whoever won the chamber got the challenge for their respective brand's championship. So, it's very little details have been released, Pat, about this, but I'm kind of hoping, crossing my fingers, that Vince might do that with the Elimination Chamber matches themselves.
I haven't really been a fan of it. I'm not a fan of the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. I think it should just be a match that happens, like, when it happens. I know they kind of, because it kind of, I just feel like it takes away from the importance and the value of it, Once they started giving that in Hell in a Cell a pay-per-view, it was kind of like, yeah, it's cool, but it's like, whatever. I kind of preferred it when it was, not really like that. And I kind of feel like, No Way Out would be a good idea to go back to, or the WrestleMania between Royal Rumble and, the pay-per-view or the premium live event.
You said it correctly.
It's a bad habit. I'm sorry. It's like smoking. I feel like they should bring something like that back, and I feel like the champion should not defend the title at that pay-per-view, and I feel like the number one contender should either put the number one contendership on the line against somebody or do some kind of gimmick like that. And I think they should kind of use that as a way to kind of like keep the champion all right going into WrestleMania. But, Vince does not care about anything. He doesn't really care about Mark's feelings. And I think at the end of the day, he just does what's in the best interest of his company, expanding his brand, setting up the future for his family and for what sports entertainment could become in the future.
Well, it'll be interesting, for sure. And again, certainly, whatever happens, the aftermath of the Royal Rumble, I'm sure it'll carry over to Elimination Chamber at, the Jeddah Superdome, the brand new facility. Apparently, Corey Graves was bragging about it on his Instagram, talked about it on last week's edition of Monday Night Raw. It is a beautiful facility. You would think so with all that oil money out there, they could build a phenomenal facility in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. So it should be interesting, I think, in terms of what that pay-per-view will hold and the significance because, hey, again, we don't know what's going to happen with the title matches next Saturday. For all we know, maybe whoever doesn't win the Rumble or whatever title, whoever the Rumble winner challenges, hey, maybe the other brand needs a number one contender. Maybe that's a good way to set up that perennial number one contender to challenge, again, the other brand at WrestleMania. So, again, some of these news bits here sort of making our rounds around the wrestling scene. Some other news, Patrick, this week announced for those of you that have Access TV on your cable system, which isn't really synonymous. I mean, I have it on my Sling. I know it's available on other streaming cable systems or streaming services, but Access TV has announced that New Japan Pro Wrestling will start airing once again on Access TV. I'm a big fan because, of course, as you all know, folks, ladies and gentlemen, I am Mr. Impact Wrestling. I love watching Access TV every Thursday. Every Thursday at 3 p.m., they have a classic pay-per-view that they air from 3 to 7 p.m. You have the BTI before the Impact, and, of course, on Thursday nights from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m., Impact Wrestling comes to you on Access TV. But now New Japan Pro Wrestling will be on 10 o'clock immediately following Impact Wrestling. I think that's a great grab, I think, for New Japan Pro Wrestling fans. Being back in the States on a maybe not the most major of networks, obviously not everybody knows Access TV, but I think it's a great job by Access TV to get New Japan on there because it's going to help their traffic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it has a lot to do with the relationship between Impact and New Japan, which to my understanding and basically from my own eyes has been a lot more beneficial for New Japan and Impact than, let's say, the relationship between New Japan and AEW. I mean, look, more New Japan is never a bad thing. I watched Wrestle Kingdom. I watched it at an event, maybe about a couple of weeks ago with, my squash partner, Anthony St. James. Shout out to Anthony St. James today. And it was a fantastic card. It was a really, really good card. It was a 2-day event. Shingo Takagi and Kazuchika Okada headlined it for the IWGP Heavyweight title. Awesome match. Winner of that took on Will Ospreay for the title, the Undisputed title. And that match was absolutely amazing. And look, I know a lot of people like to say Roman or Kenny Omega. Kazuchika Okada, for a very long time, has really staked a place for one of the best wrestlers, if not the best wrestler in the world, along with Bryan Danielson. But I mean, it was just a great event, and I can't wait for that replay to be on Access. I think it's great, and just more exposure for New Japan in America, and maybe even some more potential subscriptions for them on New Japan World.
Absolutely, I think it's a great deal again for Access TV. Staying on with the Impact theme, real quick. Obviously, No Surrender coming on pay per view for anyone who subscribes to Impact Plus. I do not, by the way. I watch my wrestling free on some other streaming services I won't name, I don't want to promote illegality. But in any event, coming up in early February, No Surrender, Moose, who a lot of people are rumoring to be maybe one of those surprise entrants in the men's Royal Rumble, the reigning and defending Impact World Champion, will defend against W. Morrissey again, Big Kaz back in the WWE days. I got to say, I think this is a great program for him. He's come a long way from his substance abuse problems. He's gotten in better shape. He's gotten much better on the microphone. Again, I can say that because I watch Impact Wrestling, again, as they celebrate 20 years now. Who would have thought that? But, I think that's a great main event coming up at No Surrender that we know about, obviously. And, as a matter of fact, on February, which is kind of interesting, though, Patrick, because on Saturday, February 19th, I believe, the same day as Elimination Chamber, is Impact Wrestling's No Surrender. So kind of interesting there to see Impact Wrestling and their pay-per-view. Obviously, it's not really going head-to-head, but, for wrestling fans, maybe some options there. I'm not sure when the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view will take place in Jeddah. You got to assume it's probably early in the afternoon because of the 7-hour time difference. So for someone like me, I'm in my glory. I can watch Elimination Chamber at noon, and then I can watch No Surrender at 8 o'clock on Impact Plus.
Well, that's the great thing about the times we're living in. I mean, look, anybody can access any of the type of wrestling they want to watch. I mean, we had the illegal cable boxes in the late 90s, RIP illegal cable. And before that, everything used to be tape trading or, a bunch of people huddling up together and spending their money to order it. So this is great, you know, and Impact, I mean, not particularly my favorite thing. I did watch it in the early NWA DNA days when they had their Wednesday pay-per-views, which I thought were awesome. We used to see a lot of indie guys on there. And, you know, I just think it's great that they're still around. They're still, you know, giving people a chance and still giving people exposure. And in some cases, giving people another opportunity coming back to WWE. So, yeah, I'm glad that it exists, but I'll probably be working on a puzzle or something while that's on.
Well, listen, it's a great day of wrestling for me. We'll get to watch Elimination Chamber during the day. Again, because of the time difference, it kind of seems to make sense that it'll be on during the day on the Peacock Network, and then, of course, you can watch No Surrender later in the evening, which will probably be a pretty good card. Before we wrap up here today, Patrick, obviously AEW has been in the news cycle lately. We know that this past Wednesday, their Dynamite edition with Jon Moxley returning after his stint in rehab, and also sort of kicking off Dynamite on Wednesday, was the long-anticipated mixed tag match where real-life couple Adam Cole, Bebe, along with AEW Women's Champion Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, teamed up for the very first time against Orange Cassidy and I believe Chris Statlander, if I'm saying the name correctly, which not yes. The best match, but it was okay. The rest of Dynamite wasn't very inspiring, but really was the surprise. Their rating went up, actually, the week before. They were at about 969,000. They were over 1 million this week at 1,032,000 respectively. So, you know, AEW is trying to think their best to kind of stay viable. And, you know, if they're not doing more than 1 million consistently, I think it's kind of reminding us this is only a niche product for a niche audience.
Well, I think they're at a really interesting time. I have not always been the biggest AEW fan. They didn't really capture my interest at the beginning. You know, these last couple of years, I haven't really been paying attention. Obviously, with Bryan Danielson going over there, kind of piqued my interest to see what was going on. How I feel about their booking is irrelevant. But I just feel like right now, you know, this is their time for them to really take a look at the talent pool out there. And I'm not just talking about wrestlers. I'm talking about people like Gabe Sapolsky, people like William Regal or Steven Regal, you know, guys like that, that you can have come and work for your company and help produce matches and help book and help create interesting, competent storylines. People that will say, hey, you don't need to go out there and do that move on the outside that you can get hurt doing. Do this instead. You could do this. You could do that. You know what I mean? Not getting hurt all the time and not putting guys at risk, because I think when left to their own devices, wrestlers are going to do what they want to do, and what they want to do is steal the show. And I think sometimes you kind of have to tame that and kind of aim it towards a specific date and time. But Tony Khan has a lot to think about, and I think he really needs to kind of figure out what will be good for him and what will be good for the company moving forward. But as long as they continue to stay in that million range, they're going to be all right. And also the Cody promo was, you know, really polarizing, obviously, as Cody has been. The Moxley promo was really an impassionate promo, you know, like really great. I mean, he's fantastic on the mic. And CM Punk and MJF, you know, I got to be honest, I haven't really been into it outside of that one time where they cut that promo, you know, with each other when they had that TV promo. But, I mean, you know, I guess it's cool. I guess I see where, like, they're going with it. But I don't know. I feel like it's a little too late for me right now. You know what I mean? Other people might feel differently, but I just feel like, you know, CM Punk should have been doing something a little bit bigger, a little bit better from the beginning, you know, but that's a whole other conversation for another time. But all in all, credit to them. As long as they continue this upward trajectory ratings-wise, they're going to continue to improve and grow their product.
I'm with you, Patrick. And again, you know, seeing that their rating went above 1 million, only the second time in a few weeks here, obviously at the end of 2021, Dynamite, I think, kind of finished. So a little bit of a downgrade. We saw 2022, you know, obviously kick off on that Wednesday at the Prudential Center nearby in Newark, where I think it drew over 1 million. Coincidentally, you know, the disappearance of Bryan Danielson from TV for a little while, maybe since being, you know, written out of the title picture. That's going to be kind of interesting, you know, when he returns. Clearly, you know, that's going to be a ratings boost when he does get back on Dynamite. To be honest, this title program right now for Hangman Adam Page, I'm not really inspired. I don't find it to be compelling. I mean, nothing against Lance Archer. He's a veteran. He's a good worker. He's been in the business. He's paid his dues. But I'm sorry, if you're looking for ratings and moving merch and prompting people to tune in, I'm sorry, Lance Archer is not going to be that guy as that challenger to take it to Hangman Adam Page. Now, again, we still got weeks and weeks until March 5th, which is coincidentally Revolution. That's AEW's next pay-per-view, emanating out of Orlando. I don't know, it's still many, many weeks ahead. If we're going to see Lance Archer for these many weeks challenging Hangman Page, I'm sorry, that's not going to move the needle. It's not going to get ratings right now. And whether it's the Bucks and their sort of quasi little tension with Adam Cole, along with Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly, whether it's Cody Rhodes' sort of polarizing presence, whether it's Jay Cargill, the new TBS champion, women's champion, it just seems like Tony Khan right now has got to get it together, man. They're approaching 3 years, coming up this May. I mean, everybody at home might just think, oh, Fernando, you're not being patient enough. Sorry, you know, we live in this sort of instant gratification society when it comes to everything, pop culture, music, movies, television. Pro wrestling's no different. And, you know,
well,
people...
not even that, Fernando, but it's just like, look at the talent that they have. Look at the people that they have. This isn't a case of them not having the talent anymore. This isn't the case of a bunch of green indie guys or guys that are a little bit hot, you know, and a couple of mixed up old guys. You have guys. One of them, they haven't stopped chanting his name for 7 years since he came back. And the other one, you know, became like one of the biggest stars in wrestling while he was gone. So it's like, use these guys to the best of your advantage. You know, you talk about Archer not being compelling. Hangman's not compelling. I'm sorry. He's a fantastic wrestler, but this storyline, you know, that all of a sudden he was a sad, drunk cowboy hanging out with, like, you know, these jobber dudes. And then all of a sudden he comes back and he's like super focused. You know, and it's like he's this guy that like could beat anybody now. And it's like, yeah, you have the talent, but I just don't think he's ready. And I think really the safe bet would have been putting the title on Danielson. You know, you could have built up Adam Page at another time. But yeah, I'm with you. I think they have to start doing more compelling things with the talent that they have at their disposal.
And again, it kind of goes back to the premise where, you know, Vince has had the body of work for almost 4 decades, if not more than 4 decades. So sometimes Vince, without even trying, is still going to draw a good number on Monday nights for Raw, even during the NFL season, even during, you know, primetime television shows that usually do well, like The Voice on NBC, The Bachelor on ABC, other shows on CBS. I mean, Vince still draws consistently close to 2 million people, if not a little bit more. Vince has had that body of work. You know, Tony Khan doesn't have that creative circle that Vince has had. And Vince is a creative genius in his own right. I mean, he drives me crazy sometimes. But at the same time, you know, he's had that body of work where that he's the blueprint. He's the standard. And Tony Khan, I get it, wants to be different than WWE. But, you know, they're approaching 3 years. There has to be a sense of urgency here. You know, I understand people think, oh, well, money grows on trees in the Khan family. But There's going to come a point when the Jaguars aren't profitable. Not that they're profitable now, but they may not get any more profitable. His soccer club may not be profitable, which I'm sure it will be. But again, it's not an endless supply of currency. At some point, Khan's got to have to show that AEW is profitable. He's going to have to show that to TNT, because at some point, TNT might turn around and say, you know what, or TBS, we like carrying you for these 3 years, but you know what, moving forward, we may not want to renew our TV deal. This is where Khan, I think, needs to push the, not panic button, but there needs to be a sense of urgency. I don't see that out of Tony Khan in the way that he presents television and the way he books.
Well, he has to really put his focus, I think, on growing his TV audience and not so much catering to the niche audience that's going to tune in no matter what. Those people will always be there. You know, I mean, Chris Jericho could come out and take a shit in the center of the ring, and they're still going to tune in and love it and sing along with Judas. But those aren't the people that you have to, like, you know, those aren't the people you should be trying to get in year three of your company. You should be trying to get the people that stop watching wrestling, that don't watch wrestling anymore. And, yeah, he, you know, said this whole big Twitter thing about it and stuff like that. But he really hasn't been able to like sustain that. So this is a big time for him, and I think if he focuses on growing his TV audience and not so much catering to those people are still going to be there. I mean, case in point, look at Vince McMahon. People hate the guy. They hate his product, but yet they still tune in. You know what I mean? So they're always going to be there no matter what.
As you said, man, it's that toxic relationship we just cannot get away from. It's almost like we're emotional cutters when it comes to pro wrestling, and specifically Vince McMahon. And I don't think that's changing anytime soon. Folks, we're going to leave it right there. Obviously, a great premiere today.
One quick thing, actually. Sure. One quick thing before we end the show. Just want to give a shout-out to the GCW event this weekend, the World on GCW. It's going to be on January 23rd. And Sunday evening at 8 o'clock, and it's going to be GCW Game Changer Wrestling, known for their deathmatch wrestling, known for their technical wrestling, known for their variety stuff. I would compare them basically to the modern day equivalent of ECW, are going to be running out of Hammerstein Ballroom, and it's their biggest show to date, one of the biggest indie shows to date. Going to be headlined by the GCW World Championship match featuring John Moxley, the champion, defending against Homicide. That should be excellent, and I hope Homicide comes away with the title in that one. I normally don't like to mark out for this kind of stuff, but Homicide has meant so much to not just indie wrestling, but New York wrestling in general, and it would be nice to see him get the win in his city. You have Matt Cardona taking on Joey Janela with Chelsea Green, Effie taking on Jeff Jarrett, Ally Catch against Ruby Soho, and the Briscoe Brothers open challenge for the GCW Tag Team Championship, which from what I'm understanding, FTR might be answering and might be showing up there. So it's definitely going to be something for fans of professional wrestling, indie wrestling, to check out and also see the ROH title defended as well. Jonathan Gresham will be defending. So, give that one a look if you're doing anything this weekend, folks.
Patrick, great, great job on that one. And, folks, again, you know, we're gonna end it right here for today. But just sort of a quick ending note here for our program. I can't say enough how proud I am to be starting this program with Patrick Rivera. Folks, you know, his time in the indie circuit, which we'll get to again in future podcasts. We'll talk about his experience working the independent scene. Certainly how we can incorporate that into this show, I think, is what's going to make this show compelling, informative, and insightful for the future editions that we'll be doing here on Blog Talk Radio. So, folks, again, do us a favor. Make sure you plug it on all of your social media, again, at www.blogtalkradio.com/workingthemarks. Yeah, it's all one word there. Share it on your Instagram story. Share it as a post. Share it on your Twitter. Share it on your Facebook. We'll be having the Working the Marks Facebook page up and running later after the broadcast. And folks, no, just share it whenever you can. Mass text, mass emails. Trust me, if you like today's analysis and breakdown of the pro wrestling scene, you can enjoy future editions as well here on the podcast. Patrick, I'll give you the last word here, brother.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the consideration. You know, you've been doing a great job with your media, and, you know, it's definitely a privilege to be able to work with you. Just want to send a shout out to my band, the Child Actors, at the_child_actors. We're on Instagram, and we're going to be playing a gig pretty soon, probably in the next couple of months. And just give a follow. Hey, Jude, don't be a bear. Cookie Ogre 316. And look forward to seeing everybody out there. Going to be doing some stand-up comedy this weekend, by the way. If anybody's going to be around at all in the Elmwood Park area, it's going to be at 8 o'clock, and it's going to be at 25 Wenzel Street on Elmwood Park. So, come on out, $25. Should be a hell of a show, and, thank you so much. Appreciate the time here.
Listen, folks, make sure you check out Patrick Rivera. Also, check out the program, folks, again, on Instagram. Please follow working_the_marks on Instagram, also on Twitter. Check us out at working_marks. Ladies and gentlemen, check out that Facebook page. It's up and running later today. You can follow us on our own Instagram and Twitter, folks. You'll see it there on the show's Instagram and Twitter pages collectively. So do check us out when you can. Do share the episode. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be coming back at you in early February. As a matter of fact, during Super Bowl weekend, We'll be talking about post-Royal Rumble. We'll be previewing the Elimination Chamber, and we'll be doing a little bit of a, you know, around the wrestling circuit to see what's going on and what's hot and what's not in the world of professional wrestling. Ladies and gentlemen, he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, Patrick Rivera, and I am New Jersey's premier journalist, Fernando Uribe, saying so long, and as always, what we'll be doing every single time here on Blog Talk Radio is we take pride in working the marks. Always on Blog Talk Radio. See you next time, folks.